Companies like Apple and Meta are currently grabbing most of the headlines in the augmented reality and virtual reality space, but is there still space for the idea of mixed reality? We're going to look at some of the advances in the technology and figure out if there's a future for more than just two companies in this space on this episode of Today in Tech. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Joining me on the show today is Mark Day. He is the CEO of Alencia XR. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Mark, tell me a little bit about Alencia XR and what you do. You are a software company and you are in the mixed reality space, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We basically, we are the exclusive licensee of Hollow Anatomy, which was originally created out of Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine. We focus exclusively really on helping students understand human anatomy and improve their understanding of the human body using holographic projection. And we've been at it for about, Case Western's been at it for about 6 or 7 years. And at their direction, we spun out of Case Western to form this company so that we could take this application into a huge variety of directions, not just focusing on anatomy, but physiology, pathology, every other OG you can think of in the medical
space. All right. So I think Microsoft helped introduce the concept of mixed reality almost 10 years ago with the introduction of the HoloLens. For those who might not be familiar with the term, what are the benefits of mixed reality to end users in some of these different educational and industrial space? And how does that differ from what people know as augmented reality or virtual reality as well? Like, you know, again, everyone's got their own little term here. So, on mixed reality, what are some of the benefits?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and it's often misunderstood, and it's evolved considerably over the last 10 years. So when I was at Microsoft, in full disclosure, when the HoloLens device was created, it was the world's first sort of untethered mixed reality device. But the idea was that we could create a spectrum of reality. On the one hand, you could have pure VR where you're in a fully digitally displaced environment. It's a little bit unnerving. You're not quite sure what's really going on around you because you're displaced into this, you know, occluded headset. You can't see the outside world. On the other hand, there's full augmented reality. Think of products like Google Glass or some of the real wear devices where you have a monocular display, but the device doesn't really understand the true differences between up, down, back, right, and forward and backward, or back and forth, and basically what we call six degrees of freedom. Mm-hmm. So mixed reality, the idea was to try to blend the two environments, and you could scale across either totally opaque VR or something with a high degree of opacity like a HoloLens. But the key difference with mixed reality is it really understands the real physical world onto which it's projecting those holograms.
All right. So what would be the reasons then that companies might still be interested or would want to explore an XR application versus maybe going with some of these other devices? Is it because they have a specific need for that 6 degrees of freedom, or they need that mixture of both kind of real and virtual?
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, we're on an evolutionary journey here with what this tech is, this whole category around XR, the broader term. And when you think about VR, it worked great to try to do some fantastical simulation that would be incredibly difficult or dangerous. So, for example, when I was working at Microsoft, we saw some really cool VR projects going on with how to do aircraft repair or train repair, which would be incredibly difficult to train in a safe environment for somebody to do that. So VR is a good space when you're just trying to get introduced for what's where in working on a physical asset. On the AR side, you think about where that introduction really took off was sort of like, help me find something just as a set of waypoints or wayfinders, say on a manufacturing floor.
Okay.
Or a shop floor, that type of thing. But in between with mixed reality, what we're getting at here is really the convergence of where we are today. So most devices that we'll see produced in the future will probably be MR or mixed reality by default, because the pass-through display systems are starting to get so good to where you can go full VR, it doesn't matter, go MR, and still have the benefit of that device understanding the physical world much better And so you don't have to make these choices if it does one or the other. Maybe it does all.
Yeah. What was this medical research application, and was that like the perfect scenario for you guys? Like, how did you get involved in this? I think you, when we did our pre-show, you said it fell to, if you fell into it, or it fell to you because of the Case Western example. Yeah, right?
I fell in love with the Hollow Anatomy application early on when I was at Microsoft, because they were one of the first sort of mixed reality, really quality, high quality experiences. And the reason was it created not only a perfect sort of illustration of the human body with a high degree of precision and clarity and high pixel density. It was a very beautiful image of the human body in 3D, mm-hmm. but it was highly collaborative. So you and I could be looking at the same holographic model, you know, you sitting in Tokyo or Boston,
right,
and me sitting in wherever, and we could be in the same shared experience together. And we could do that and with unlimited scale, with a number of as many people as we want in that experience. So that's where mixed reality really became important. And in a learning environment, this is critically important. Professors often say to us, as we work with all these universities around the country and around the globe, learning the human body is a team sport. So you really have to be able to collaborate, see what I see directly from the position that I'm standing in. So if I'm looking at a cardiovascular system, what you see from your angle in the cross section might be different than what I see. And invariably, we're going to learn and observe things a little bit differently. We should share that information. So being able to do that real time is critically important. And this application for a learning environment just was essential. And everything else that we saw either lacked that precision, clarity, or wasn't really pedagogically sound. It mm-hmm. wasn't put together in such a way that where it really accelerated the learning experience. And Hollow Anatomy, it turns out, with Case Western's own preliminary peer review studies, their students are able to learn twice as fast, and they're retaining that information 44% longer. And in med school, while it's essential, it turns out learning human anatomy can be one of the most difficult things you do that weeds people out. So as promising clinical professionals, it just seemed like this could be a real game changer.
Right. And they also then, because then they don't have to train on human cadavers initially, I guess. I mean, I would imagine they would still incorporate that in, like, you would learn on the mixed reality headset for a while. And then once they felt you were confident enough, then you could go into the physical world of cadavers and train that way. Correct? Or because they're not eliminating the idea of training on a real human body.
That's right. It's not intended to be a substitute for cadaveric dissection or learning about the human body in that realm. It is intended to be a digital equivalent. So when you're a first and second year med student, you're not learning surgical simulation per se. You're really just trying to understand what is where in the human body, what's it called, where does it sit, what is its relationship to, say, another human organ or component or subsystem of the human body. And it turns out just for learning where things are, you need to dig around in a cadaver. And in fact, when you try to replicate the cadaver in digital 3D, you're not actually doing anything to accelerate the learning process, because it looks the same, right? I might as well dig around in a cadaver. But it's a cost savings, certainly a huge cost savings, to not have to maintain a cadaver lab for a first or second year med student if I don't need to use a cadaver for the purposes of learning. When I get into learning surgical procedures, then, or rehearsals, then it's essential.
I just realized, instead of, like, for some reason I was assuming it was the whole cadaver training part of it. Maybe that's something I saw in a video, but the actual anatomy and the mixed reality can be used to replace kind of textbooks and lecture halls and pictures, right? Is that where it's being used more?
Absolutely. We're learning in 3D, right? Our human experiences and how we perceive the world. And that's the whole benefit of mixed reality, is how do I increase your perception and understanding of what's going on in the physical world? That's the benefit of the whole category of technology.
Yeah.
So I can do that in 3D more effectively than 2D than I should.
Right. So in this space for a long time, there was kind of a stagnancy. I want to see if I can use that word, or a lull in the kind of the developments, the enthusiasm for a lot of these products. And you've been in this space, so obviously you must have seen some kind of lull until we started seeing announcements by Meta and announcements by Apple. And even I think Magic Leap is another hardware company out there that is trying to make the leap, so to speak. You know, has that helped for kind of your business and what you're seeing? And obviously you have a challenge with Microsoft because the HoloLens, they're not developing it anymore, correct? Or are they?
That fortunately, that's not true. We need Microsoft to stay in the business of advancing their hardware innovations as well as the software innovations. And I do not have any indication that they're backing away from the space. But more broadly, we needed only big tech could really afford to build these immersive headsets with the high quality experiences that we enjoy. And in particular, it's more difficult to do with a device that is a translucent display like a HoloLens or a Magic Leap device, and even an Apple Vision Pro. But getting really accurate simulation of the real world requires a lot of lasers and sensors, LiDAR sensors that can make sense of the physical world so that it appears to be really there. But that technology, that development, particularly those displays, were enormously expensive to develop. Microsoft spent billions developing their own technology. Magic Leap, not dissimilar. There's another company called Xreal, from China that's been doing the same thing. They've got some impressive tech coming to the fore. Meta will have its first true AR glass that will be really high quality 6-dot, presumably in the fall. But the way around that cost was to develop using VR pass-through display, which was a cheap trick, quite frankly, to try to simulate the outdoor environment. But you're actually not looking at the real world. You're looking at a movie of the real world. And the inherent problem with that is it actually creates quite a bit of neurological discomfort to replicate the frame rate through VR display sets, the same way that it works through a true translucent display, which is not a cheap trick. It's an expensive trick.
Yeah.
Literally project that hologram into the physical world.
So what we're
seeing now is those display costs are coming way, way, way down.
Yeah.
And pass-through display is getting much, much better. So we're seeing a much stronger convergence where I think once we hit that price point inflection of, say, you know, under $1,000 for these headsets, the game will change.
So would it be fair to say then that a lot of the development has been under the radar and or overshadowed maybe by some of these really, really big hyped announcements and hardwares? Is it kind of in between those two ranges?
I think it's yes. It's both, right? There's certainly been a lot of hype, and obviously the category did not deliver the business value as promised, say 5-10 years ago, when mixed reality sort of lived at the trough of disillusionment, mm-hmm. as Gartner would indicate in their magic quadrant. We're well past that now. It's real world stuff. I mean, Airbus is using the HoloLens device still, even though it's not brand new tech by any stretch, to build A300 airframes. NASA has devices on the space station, a variety of different immersive headsets to do self-guided repair, which is a very common use case that we see. So from an education and training standpoint, I mean, the value proposition of this technology is just too strong to ignore. Now we just got to see these manufacturing and hardware costs go way, way down. And we're going to see this pick up. So I do think with Apple within a major inflection point in the space, creates ubiquity just by virtue of who they are and how, in their industrial design quality. And even though Apple Vision Pro is quite deficient in delivering on a lot of the sort of frontline worker capability that we're used to seeing in the space, it's still an amazing advancement, and everything they do henceforth is just going to get way better.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to look forward to. I think they alone have reinvigorated the space.
Yeah. All right. So you're basically letting me ask the next question. What are your thoughts of the Vision Pro, and what did it get right, and what needs to be fixed, and can they be a leader in this space that will help direct more ideas and more software and more kind of use cases to bring this beyond a niche-y type of thing?
Well, my feeling about the Vision Pro, and from my perspective, I need these things to be highly operational tools. not really sexy toys. I don't really need to see Avatar in 3D and sit in this device quite uncomfortably for 3 hours. So one of the primary deficiencies that we see for this thing in use as a tool is you can't wear the device for an extended period of time. So it's not really a frontline worker device. I can't wear this thing on a shop floor and build stuff with it.
Yeah.
It's quite uncomfortable to do that. However, things like the eye tracking are just superior to anything I've ever seen. Super precise. Wherever you look inside the device, the eye tracking is incredibly precise. And with just a finger tap that's barely in the field of view, it knows exactly what you're looking at. So that's pretty awesome. But because it's a pass-through display, again, it's not a translucent, what we call a refractive MEMS display or some other display that uses a translucent, you know, I can see your eyeballs for real, not this weird uncanny valley thing. It's also creating neurological discomfort. So it's got a long way to go. We mm-hmm. know they hurried the market, right? They wanted to be there. They made a big breakthrough in a lot of the tech, but they mostly, I think, from a comfort and fit standpoint, they've got a ways to go. They got to make this thing lighter. It's too heavy on your neck. They didn't get the sort of cranial center of gravity right. I think the folks at Microsoft have done a pretty good job of that, but they too have a long way to go. So somebody's got to figure out how to make this display and the weight of this thing more like what you would expect with, say, with a pair of spectacles, and we're getting there. I think over the next 5 years, you're going to see dramatic improvement in the display subsystems.
I think you mentioned earlier in the show that a lot of this needed to be done by these big companies. Do you still feel like these big companies need to be in this space, or is there room for smaller companies to develop smaller use case scenarios? But then that leads to another problem that I'll ask this question.
I think about market opportunity, right? It's solve small problems. We don't need this tech. We need to solve big problems for tech to be viable. And we need to fundamentally change how we learn as a species in order for this tech to really take off. Even though it's amusing and fascinating and a cool toy, if you think about it, think about the gamification of learning. A lot of that was driven with VR. So this has to be breakthrough in the way it works for people. I do believe that there is room for smaller technology companies, but it's probably going to be through an OEM route. So I get a company, say an optics company, that has cracked the code on how to build these display subsystems with high reliability, low failure rate, and keeping that well under, say, a $500 manufacturing price point to get to a full headset of some sort,
right?
Below $1,000. I do think that we're right around the corner from that. That's going to be the way smaller tech is going to get in. If they got to do the R&D on this stuff, it's just too expensive.
Okay.
But we can, sort of piece these headsets together. I do think that it's my own conjecture, but I think companies like Microsoft could very well see themselves going down so more of an OEM realm, where they're not trying to do all this manufacturing in-house. And quite frankly, there's not been a lot of examples of Microsoft doing enormously awesome hardware work. This was a breakthrough piece of technology, HoloLens, but hugely expensive for them to build. But we need companies. Magic Leap might be another better example. Far less capitalized, much smaller, company, fully focused on building these headsets, and well funded by the Saudi government.
Yeah. Does this mean that this space, this hardware, this device, this concept needs to follow the PC evolution or even the smartphone revolution, where you have one or two kind of base frameworks? I mean, you mentioned OEMs there, so there's like a headset. It doesn't necessarily, it can be made by six or seven different companies, but it has a common OS, it has common apps, common tools to develop for. As a software company, you could develop for one and it can go on to, you develop for the system and then eight different headsets it works with. Does it need to do that, or is that just kind of a pipe dream to get to that
world? Not at all. In fact, I would say we're already there. You think about companies at the software developer operating system level, Unity or Unreal. They're the most ubiquitous software companies out there building the primary environment on which the most immersive headsets work. And if your stuff doesn't work on Unity, or Unreal, quite likely you have no prayer as a market.
Okay.
And they provide the ability to reach last mile operating systems like, you know, Windows MR, which is being deprecated significantly. But, you know, Apple iOS, Android, which is by far the largest developer operating system in the world, they're already there. So it's a matter of the hardware companies getting the cost down and then making themselves available. But yes, to your point, there's a bigger point that you've made, I think, that's really important for people to understand about this category. And I say category because it's not that big, right? It's still pretty nascent.
Yeah.
But there's this notion of ubiquitous computing. Some computer science professor in the 80s coined it from Michigan State. But he said this sort of immersive technology has got to become the next wave of ubiquitous computing, starting out with, say, mainframes, moving to PCs, then smartphones and mobile technologies, and now this.
Yeah.
Once the form factor gets into something that's, you know, really delightful, then we see the category really take off. But for now, it's a little bit of a physical headache.
Yeah, it's not necessarily delightful at the moment. and I think that's the big struggle, is because there are several different things. You mentioned the neck, you know, and the head hurts, and, you know, people with glasses versus people that don't have glasses. That's always a thing. You've got young developing brains. You certainly don't want children to use this because, you know, you get nausea and sickness. And I think that anything around the head is a completely different paradigm from what we've had before with PCs and phones and things like that, because, you know, it's not like,
right,
I did this with my phone, right? Yeah,
that is the fundamental difference.
Yeah.
Right, we're trying to develop a computer on your head versus a computer in your hands or on your desk, and it's a fundamentally different set of challenges from an ergonomic standpoint.
Right
And it's really got to get to this level of spectacle, or some, you know, a contact lens. And but, you know, Moore's law, it's just a matter of time.
I like the optimism. So the other scenario I always think of is down the road, you know, for example, you know, you would, is a single device that someone can use for multiple use cases throughout their day. And so, you know, maybe it's a medical student using the device and they're using a Holo Anatomy and they're learning about human anatomy. And then their next class is a history class, and then they use it for a VR history lesson where they visit the Colosseum in Rome. And then, you know, school's over, and then they go home and they, you know, watch a movie, play a game. And then in theory, they take the device off, go outside.
You know, yeah, so right.
I don't want to say that they're using it 24/7, because that would be a nightmare, and then we're in a world of Wally, right, where we're sitting on our virtual couches, and I don't think anybody wants that. So
yeah, this thing's bad enough.
Yeah,
right?
and again, maybe it's something like, I'm just frustrated with the fact of how much I use this phone all day. Can you envision a world where this happens, where we get a single device with multiple use cases? Or is it going to be like, well, I'm going to have to put this one on for my history lesson, I'm going to have to put this one on to watch a movie, I'm going to have to put this one on to do my medical research?
No, I do. I think we're going to snap into an architectural framework on the hardware side that, yes, there'll be last mile differences, just like there are with cars and, you know, golf clubs and everything else you can think of. But essentially, it's the same thing. And it's absolutely necessary that we get to that level of sort of a rote frame of reference about how these headsets are going to be constructed and what really physically goes on your head.
Yeah.
And eyeglasses, you know, this is the form factor that we have to achieve. I don't think you have to get all the way to a contact lens. That is another set of neurological discomfort issues that we have to think about. But we will get there, and it, you know, the power, compute, storage, frame rate, all those things are just too big and too unwieldy yet, but they're getting there. And the main thing I think that's going to break through for us is, A, we got to get the hardware technology small enough. And there's been vast improvements in everything from compute storage chips, NVIDIA, and Qualcomm, companies like that, who reduce the size of the chips necessary to drive the graphics. The AI has been phenomenal. But then the other really important thing, of course, is the storage. So right now, we've got to get the batteries significantly smaller and sufficient performance to where it's, again, it's not a boat anchor on your head, or you don't have some extraneous wire hanging down your belt.
Yep.
A lot of use cases where that's just not going to work, particularly in a manufacturing environment where right now, anyway, if you think about the term metaverse or industrial metaverse, that's where it's taking off, is in manufacturing shop floors and educational classrooms.
Yeah.
Where getting the form factor precisely right probably isn't that important if a student's only going to be in the headset for a half an hour to an hour. That's kind of where we play.
Right.
And so it's a great medium already for now. But if I'm going to be on a shop floor or on a racetrack, I've got to have something I can wear all day.
Right.
So
right.
Get to that level of standardization. What I like about mixed reality as opposed to mobile phones is it lets you, especially with the in the realm of AI, it will bring in ability for us to understand the physical world and appreciate it more. Your mobile phone takes you away from the physical. Mixed reality can maybe draw us nearer to the physical world. I'm an avid outdoor enthusiast. I'm looking forward to that heads up display finder when I'm out in the backcountry to find my way if I get lost. I'm just like pulling around with my, you know, my GPS device. I'd rather have my, I'd be able to sort of call up my own private Siri version in my ski goggle or my glasses.
Yeah.
And help me find my way out of the wilderness.
Mark, I love your enthusiasm and your optimism here for this space. How do you convince people that are a little skeptical or cynical about the technology, given what's already happened? How do you get them re-energized? Because whenever we do an episode around AR, VR, like, our views are just like minuscule and people are just like, I get the, no. You know, how do you get them re-energized?
Well, I think you have to have a really good business case for the tech, right? It's the right tool for the job. And I come from the perspective of it's a tool, not a toy. If I've got to bank on the consumer market to really appreciate this as a tool, I think we're going to fail.
Yeah.
But if we can help people understand from a B2B perspective how useful this tech really is, how fundamentally it's already changing the business world, particularly in the realm of manufacturing, education, and healthcare. Those are the three big areas that I see that are already transformational. I'll give you an example. This was early days too. This was way back in, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. I went to a rather large public hospital in Beijing and saw that they were using the HoloLens device to do surgical planning and simulation for hip replacements, where they were physically overlaying metabolic scans over the patient to help the surgeon understand exactly where to place that arthroscopic scalpel so they don't nick the femoral artery and have the patient bleed out on the table. That's the most common way people don't make it through that surgery, through what's called the triangle of death. Well, they could see through MRI scans exactly that patient data being twisted around. So that's a pretty highly stylized use case. I appreciate that. But that's a fundamental game changer in how that is saving lives.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure I want that technology in my operating room that isn't FDA cleared. So different regime in China. But nonetheless, that is a clear example of the promise of where this can go. So where there's high business value, there will be a great buyer for it. And we're seeing that in our own business.
But hasn't you know, in previous categories of technology, hasn't it been a mixture of both consumer and business that have driven a device into a mainstream adoption? Obviously, PCs were great for, you know, I go back to my history with my dad, who has always said, like, oh, you know, the computer should be used for business and don't put these silly games on it. But as a kid, I'm like, no, I'm playing games. I'm doing all this other stuff. And so that got that me into it. And same thing with phones. It was initially like, you know, it was probably the phones went into the business. It was consumer that drove it into the business. So don't you feel like it has to succeed on both levels?
You're absolutely right. There has to be a convergence of both. We need the push and the pull. We need the demand pull from the consumer. We need the demand push from the business standpoint. And where we'll meet in the middle, again, is where they drive down the hard parts, right? That's how the PC took off. That's how everything is taken off. That's how the internet took off.
Yeah.
But the business use case is usually how we seed the market. It's the consumer use case and the consumer price point that helps us ubiquitize the category.
Yeah. Just to be devil's advocate for a second, then, does it need to be a mainstream device or category? Can this succeed by these individual use cases, or does it need a mainstream adoption in order to drive the cost down? I guess that's a big question for every technology that gets developed.
Yeah, it really is. And I think we're in a place where we're a little bit stuck. But again, where I'm optimistic most of all is the incredible innovation progression that has occurred with what used to be reserved for a VR device and those display headsets. That pass-through capability is getting significantly better. And if we can figure that out as the way through, that's going to drive the cost of manufacturing of these headsets through the basement, and those form factors will necessarily get small.
Yeah.
And that's where we'll see the consumer demand really pick up.
Now,
and the last thing is content. So the thing where Apple kind of missed was they claim to have come out with a lot of interesting 3D content, but when you look deeper, it's not actually 3D. It doesn't actually use volumetric spaces and how they craft those experiences. There are very few, there's not enough that came out to market. Content is king.
Yeah.
You've got to have a lot of, but they won't come unless they see a device price point that is going to change the game. But
right.
I'm very optimistic. Look, we used to have to consume entire data centers to do 3D volumetric experiences or do AI to train machine learning algorithms around AI. We used supercomputers. We had form factors for quantum computing that were the size of office buildings, and they were in highly controlled environments. All those things are getting cheaper. So we are definitely on the path to ubiquity here. And I need you to invite me back in 3 to 5 more years where we're doing this maybe with a pair of glasses that have augmented reality or mixed reality built right in.
My director might have a few words to say about that because he does like this, the face-to-face in-person approach as well. I had another question for you and I got sidetracked.
We can go all over with this category, can't we?
Yeah. And that's what I find fascinating about this whole space is is trying to convince people that this is something that will work and will get better for people.
And it's tough, but look, I mean, there's this huge breakthrough. Every time we see a new release, we see tens of thousands more users adopting this technology. I get excited about in the business world. I know that's small numbers in the realm of humanity. But here's another fact, a data point. Apple took 200,000 units of pre-order before they ever hit the market. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds like a small number when there's billions of people on the planet. But for a technology at $3,500 a piece, there was an awful lot of demand. That's a demand signal that we need to pay attention to. If Meta can come out with their next device, say in October, whenever it's going to be, and they check in at sub $2,000 and the experience is better than the AVP, we're going to see an even bigger set of users adopt the space. So I think it's going to start to snowball here. And I think the next 3 years is where we're going to see a massive progression leap in the quality of the technology. You're going to see less of probably around massive innovation, but just more about how do we create these devices at scale with low cost. And that's where people are going to get into it because it's clearly a premium technology still.
It also feels like that this lull happened because of companies either were spending too much money or they were running out of money or, some of the accountants came in and said, all right. And then unfortunately or fortunately, generative AI came out and then the spotlight went from here to there. And that's when, Meta's like, oh, I guess we're going into AI now. And I think that was probably a disservice for the development of this technology.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because that's actually going to create a little bit of a perfect storm as well with generative AI and things like computer vision. That's an area that should accelerate the category mixed reality tremendously. I mean, think about the ability to walk in a room that's unfamiliar to you and have the device inform you of what you're seeing in the room or what you're seeing with a patient or what you're seeing with a piece of machinery that you're unfamiliar with. Mm-hmm. And it's helping you as sort of a remote assistant or an assistant on your shoulder in your brain telling you this is what it's for. Here's the shop manual on how to fix it. Oh, by the way, I can teach you how to do something. That is a huge breakthrough in what this category of mixed reality could provide.
Yeah.
And those technologies have become tremendously cheaper as well. So yeah, while AI itself has gotten all the limelight of late, there will be a reconvergence here. Microsoft, I think, with, you know, with HoloLens, took did a disservice to themselves, really, when they took a step back from their V3 roadmap that mm-hmm. they were planning on building a version 3. I think that was one of the worst kept secrets in the company. And then there was a big question about whether they could deliver on this close quarter combat train rehearse fight IVAS. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the order that they, the big deal they did with the Pentagon with the integrated visual augmentation system. And literally it's a device that's meant to be used in close quarter combat. Well, it didn't, for a while there, it looked like maybe that wasn't gonna actually work out. It's working out. The soldiers are accepting this device. They're using it in real live fire training exercises, and they're gonna do their first major delivery of this device. That's a breakthrough. Even though it's for the military, there's a lot of that technology that Microsoft is gonna retain, and that serves as a very useful roadmap, whether they internalize the manufacturing effort or not. To me, it's an incredibly useful roadmap for another civilian device that they will likely produce. I have every reason to believe, and it will be amazing.
Okay.
And Microsoft was first. They're not good at this kind of thing, but they were the first ones to come out with such a headset. And so I really, you know, $7 billion later, I hope they pull it.
I remember my other question from before when I lost my train of thought.
Yes,
so,
disclosure, I am an investor.
You were talking about how content is king, and so content is going to drive a lot of that. I would also say the next level of content would be user generated content. And you know, the thing that got me most excited about the Apple Vision Pro was the little camera that it had, so then you could start recording 3D videos and images. And so, you know, a headset that gives you the ability to consume content, but then also create it. And then there's a marketplace for that kind of thing. Again, it's that YouTubeization of the world. If I could go in and, you know, create a 3D version of my house just by walking around it, and then I'll, you know, create games based on my house or, you know, famous landmarks and things like that, that just opens up for, you know, another whole market. Would you agree with that?
That's a really good point. I thought that was brilliant on Apple's part, was to release that ability for you to be able to do your own sort of 3D volumetric filming and then post that up for other people to consume. That will definitely drive the category and awareness about what it could do. The first thing I did when I put it on and I figured all that out, I looked over at my dog and I was filming my dog. He's old, so he's going to go in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I'm spending all this time filming the dog or the family or whatever, because it's so much more lifelike in that experience. It's so much more interesting to view content in a 3D immersive way, and being able to sort of capture a frame and walk around it.
Yep.
You know, as if you're doing this out of body experience, walking around somebody else or yourself or a group of people. And then being able to replay that. So yeah, I agree. I think this is an area that could be enormously interesting. And then here too, you know, for better or for worse, once AI gets infused in these things, boy, it's going to be a whole different universe.
So I want to ask, this is a little bit of an offshoot question, a little bit of a tangent, but do you think a lot of technology companies and developers, they just get too addicted to science fiction type stories and creating something that a sci-fi writer has written about like 20, 30, 40 years ago, and now we've got to develop that technology? Because again, the metaverse and virtual reality, there's been, you know, since the early 80s, I think there's been stories about those types of worlds that were created. And then, you know, more recently, Ready Player One, and then of course The Matrix and things like that, where, you know, it gets people excited in the mainstream, and then someone goes, well, I have to build this, or we have to create this. Like, no, you don't necessarily have to build it. Like what's your take on that?
Wow. Well, given that I was one of those kids of wonder, you know, the first time I saw Star Wars in 1977, not to date myself, it's a brand new thing in the theater, was Princess Leia being projected out of R2-D2 as a hologram. I'm like, sold. That's what I want to do. So thank God for science fiction to stimulate human imagination. around things that are just out of reach.
Okay.
Or may seem wildly out of reach. We need that. We continuously need that. I'm so thrilled that the human experience, our brains provide us the means of seeing beyond ourselves in some way that may have practical application. And you look at so much of that and it's coming true. I mean, the whole idea of the Dick Tracy watch, sorry, as I wear my analog watch here, it's a real thing, right? You think about, I was listening to a really interesting podcast, not yours, sorry.
That's okay.
About teleportation and holoportation. We can do teleportation now using holograms. And that's what, you know, Tupac, I think it was the episode was about Tupac and how this young mind who grew up in science fiction thought, wouldn't it be great to recreate the dead as a rock concert? Well, we don't have to recreate the dead. We can recreate the living. We can do 3D immersive teleportation experiences now. I mean, that's something that was born out of science fiction. We need that imagination.
I think we've seen that with ABBA, because ABBA does a concert now that's kind of virtual, and they and the same company, I think, just did a license with KISS. And so...
Why not bring KISS into my living room?
I can think of a lot of reasons for that, but
well, I don't want to necessarily get licked by that tongue, but I think having Paul Stanley in your living room might be kind of interesting.
All right. I always like that the people that it all comes back to Star Wars, because I've met roboticists who were obsessed with the droids in Star Wars. You mentioned the holograms, and you know, you've got then people that are trying to recreate lasers and things like that. But like for me, it was always the Death Star trench run. It was like when he goes in, and just seeing that was like, oh, I'd love to do that at some point. And that was made possible later through video games and things like that, but I think it all comes back to that film.
That imagination.
Yeah.
And hopefully it catches you. I think for you to get, you know, become really someone who gets, you know, wildly excited and derives that technical intensity at an early age, it comes from the imagination that's stimulated from science fiction. And you look at all flight simulation now, it's all immersive. There is no 2D flight simulation for professional training anymore. Every single flight sim center, military or civilian, uses immersive technology.
Oh, okay.
And that's just table stakes now.
Oh.
So to be able to, you know, fly through the Death Star or fly through a cityscape at Mach 5, you know, is something you want to try to replicate that as lifelike as you can. I had a wild opportunity to go to the Paris Air Show and watch the Rafael French fighter jet. All of it was immersive. And then putting an immersive headset on and then climbing inside a centrifuge, I mean,
yeah,
short of crashing and dying, it's pretty realistic.
What was the kind of the aha moment for you when, you know, was it, you know, early on of doing this, or has there been a more recent experience that you've had where you've gone, yes, that nailed it. That's what we need to do, or that's something that people need to experience.
I think what nailed it for me was two events. I'm really glad you raised that, because it was definitely more recent, and it was at my work at HoloLens when we spun up the HoloLens business.
Yeah,
I was there at the beginning of that. One of which was at the strategic NAVAIR. In San Diego, they were doing immersive simulation experiences that didn't require a headset. So they had a room with a bunch of cameras, and they could project the bow of a battleship, and it felt really real. And you could get on a, you know, an M50 gun or whatever on the front, and literally the ship kind of moving a little bit and watching your tracer fire going off. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Now, that's not very portable as an experience, but I thought it was quite remarkable. The other experience was more recently, there was and this is not new, there are displays on your PC that give you the impression that you're looking at a 3D hologram that's projected off your screen. The first place I saw that was at Huawei, of all places, in Shanghai about 5 years ago. And I thought, okay, now, so it's one thing to create an immersive headset. That's actually, again, a bit of a cheap trick.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can do 3D holographic experiences that don't require a headset, That's incredibly hard to imagine now with a ton of equipment, but that too will become something that may become table stakes for us that we'll just insist on. Very much like you have, you know, say, you know, a Sonos in your room, you might turn on a 3D version of it where you can just move your fingers and a hologram shows up and you've got four cameras, small, very discrete cameras in your room, and you can walk around those holograms as if they're real. So there's some really progressive things that are happening in the space that don't require us to think about the metaphor of extended reality the way we do today.
All right. All right, Mark Day, again, CEO of Alentia XR, thanks for joining us on the show. And we will have you back in a few years, and you can just come on show and go, I told you, this is going to work.
We're hopefully sooner.
Hopefully sooner.
All right. Lots more to talk about.
Yep, thank you. All right, that's all the time we have for today's episode. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to the channel, and add any thoughts you have below. Join us every week for new episodes of Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Thanks for watching.